roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
From the fight capital of the world, inside our beautiful home here in Las Vegas, you're listening to another episode of the MMA Junkie Radio Show, the only show that matters. I'm your host, Gorgeous George, and with me as always is the devious and dastardly Goz, our ace co-host. What's up, Goz, on a Monday, April 13th?
It's mattered for 13 years.
Yeah.
I can't wait to get into that.
That's right. We're going to talk about our Saturday show that we did on Facebook. It was a chat that turned into a show, actually, and it was over 2.5 hours long. Very similar to the old school tag radio, early days MMA Junkie Radio. So we'll point you in that direction towards the end of the broadcast, because we'd love for you to take a listen to it. In fact, on that show, we had Jorge Masvidal, one of the biggest stars, if not the biggest star in MMA right now. Of course, Conor McGregor's a monster as well, but you can never tell whether that guy's retired or not. I don't think he is, so Jorge would know he's number two right now. Stitch Duran was on the show. Gerald Harris, former Ultimate Fighter, and UFC veteran, Bellator veteran, as well as King Mo Lawal, former Strikeforce light heavyweight champ. He was on the show, and then we had a lot of pop-ins, a lot of former callers to our show on SiriusXM, and even back before then when we would take calls as just a regular Junkie Radio show. Old school, man. It was cool. It was cool to have that, and even some of our work colleagues, Simon Simano, Dan Tom, Danny Olkers. So yeah, we'll talk about that. We hope you all had a great Easter, as great as it can be under the confines of the quarantine. And then, of course, we'll recap all of the latest news in the sport of mixed martial arts. So buckle up, folks. Here we go. It's another MMA Junkie Radio Show. What's up, Junkie Nation? Check us out on Wednesdays for the month of April, as we will be on Sportscaster, www.sportscaster.com. Check us out at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, and we're going to give you an extra MMA Junkie Radio Show. Myself, Goz, and Max. Well, Goz, there wasn't much to do on Easter. There was no hunting for eggs or special family meals or anything like that. You cooked up some nice enchiladas. That was great. I went for an early walk. That was fun. But yeah, it wasn't the typical go to mom and dad's and see the family and then put some money in some eggs and have fun as adults.
No, it was just your typical quarantine day, really, when you think about it. No sports. On Easter, isn't there usually like a good NBA game or something going on?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. It was just a normal day, man. This is the new normal so far.
Yeah, I agree. But either way, there was a lot of people that watched masses over their laptop. And then how about Andrea Bocelli busting out a little mini concert or whatever?
All I saw was like the reviews. Mm-hmm. As soon as I saw that, I was like, oh man, I thought that would have been cool to watch.
Yeah, I sent you the link.
Did you?
Yeah, I texted you the link so you could see it. I'm pretty sure you were one of them because Juliet had sent it to me. So I just sent it to, like, copy pasted it to a few people. Mm. And so you could see it from YouTube when it was happening. But, like I say, it's there and you can go back and check it out. So again, and I believe in the Jewish faith, there's the Passover. Mm-hmm. So, you know, whatever you observe, or if you didn't observe anything, hopefully it was just a nice, safe weekend for everybody. We're still in the midst of this global pandemic. And I would say that different parts of the world are just getting it in different ways. Maybe some cities are overcoming, or countries or cities and countries are overcoming, and some maybe are just starting to get bludgeoned, you know, the same way. For example, we always fall back on Italy. Italy just seemed like a country, like, wow, one of the first. I mean, it started in China, but then you throw Italy in there, and then there was a follow-up Spain, the United States, and so on. So that out of the way. On Saturday, we did have our 13-year anniversary show, I guess. Yeah, show. It was a Facebook chat and turned into a show, and that was a ton of fun. It's on www.facebook.com/MMAJunkieVideo. I mean, right out of the bat, Jorge Masvidal's on the show, and he was on for 45 minutes. We talked about a lot of stuff, including a great street fight story to end his segment. Stitch Duran came on, and they were on simultaneously, and we were talking to Stitch for a while and how it's affected him as a cut man in not just MMA and boxing, but remember, he was doing a lot of bare knuckle. He's done the occasional Muay Thai and kickboxing show, but he's not used to being cooped up. I mean, he is, I guess, Monday through Thursday, but then he flies on the weekends and corners the top fighters in the world.
I think he was, I want to say, in New York when they announced the quarantine, like right before.
Yeah, he got out of there just as they were kind of like, you know, like let's say they were closing the doors on New York. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he just barely slipped under, like those dudes on Titanic. What remember dudes? when they're closing the
oh yeah,
I think what was it, five little different compartments?
Yeah, that guy was like almost Indiana Jones-esque, right?
Yeah, there was some really really close calls there. All right, what else? Gerald Harris was listening to the show. Gerald Harris, I know a lot of you young listeners might be like, who the fuck's that guy? Gerald Harris was on The Ultimate Fighter. He wrestled at Cleveland State with Stipe Miocic, and he's a comedian now. He's really, really funny. But he was on The Ultimate Fighter and did well for himself, you know, came out of, and actually had a 3-1 run in the UFC. And then get this, folks, they cut him. They cut him because he was involved in one of the most boring fights ever. Looking back, we've had boring fights like that, and they didn't get cut. But for some reason, that day, Joe Silva, one of the original matchmakers for the UFC, just was peeved.
It was Michael Falcao, right?
Yeah. And Harris won the fight. And he went to 3-1. But, yeah, it was I don't know. You know, I don't even remember. Yeah, Falcao lost the fight, right? Or won the fight?
No, it was in Detroit. I think he won it.
Falcao?
I think so, yeah.
So that gave Gerald Harris his only loss?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Well, Harris was also in Bellator. Actually, Harris was up until about a year ago. And he was going to make a second attempt at the reality show. But I guess one key thing, he just, it was the 13-year anniversary of the show. And what he wanted to do is just share a story with a lot of people that, actually, I needed to be reminded of. When we had Dana White in our studio in 2009, Gerald was trying to get back into the UFC. That's right. He had gone through Tough and I think got cut or something. And then when he came, I think he came back for a second run in the UFC or something like that. I forget. Or maybe that was just his first run. But he actually called into the show.
Mm-hmm. With an accent.
He did. He, I guess, tricked or trolled Dana White, however it was, but it actually initiated him getting back on. So he thanks us, and he always thanks us every time he sees us. So he wanted to chime in, and he did. And then King Mo not only called in, but then was our co-host for like the last hour and a half as we were talking to longtime junkies and, like I say, some of our work colleagues, and we talked about pro wrestling, serial, MMA, other sports, COVID-19, you name it, and we talked about it. But it was really, really a fun ride. So a lot of you longtime listeners, I think, will like it. And some of you younger listeners can still hear Masvidal for 45 minutes. So
mm-hmm. That was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. And so now let's shift, of course, throughout, you know, what happened throughout the weekend to come up on Monday and some of these stories we want to discuss. When we did the show on Thursday, we suspected that at any time stuff could go down, but it hadn't gone down yet, right? Because the cancellation went down, I have it here, on April 9th. It was our mom's birthday. I remember wishing her a happy birthday. And then the UFC wound up canceling UFC 249 later that afternoon. So basically what happened was it was governmental pressure. Senator Dianne Feinstein had written a letter or a memo, and Governor Gavin Newsom from California strongly was objecting the fact that the UFC kind of was circumventing or sidestepping the stay-at-home order that everybody else is abiding by in the state. How are they doing that? By going to Native American land. And in doing so, they govern themselves. Now, look, I know the UFC is taking a lot of heat. They weren't just cavalier, like, you know, basically setting up a ring, like what you see in, what's that dog fight, you know, where they just kind of put up a ring and go, hey, everyone, come on down here to the secret location.
Dada's thing?
Yeah, Dada 5000s.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they were actually going to have proper judges and referees and the fighters' safety in mind. Dana White is you know, however off-putting he can be at times, whatever he was going to do, he was going to try and set up the safest environment possible for everybody. Mm-hmm. That I believe. Should he have been doing it? No, I think the answer is no. And I think most people will say, no, we get it. But like we say, someone's got to do this. I mean, federally, we're not all staying at home. There's 7 states that aren't observing this. So there's a lot of things that are going on that not everyone's on the same wavelength. And I think Dana's just saying, look, I think we're a sport that can pull this off and do something good for what people need. People are at home and they're scared and they're not doing anything and finding other forms of entertainment. You know, they're got ESPN with Horace. So the Spelling Bee is going to be on later. You know, there's just, I think he's just an outside-the-box thinker. That, aside from being an ally to Donald Trump, and I know Donald Trump wants normalcy. And so I think Dana said, I got you, man. You know, and so I think that's why he went down all the way to the end swinging. Now, that said, is there money involved? Of course.
You don't think there's a little ego involved,
He's got to deliver shows. He's got to deliver shows for sure. But I think he knew, even with the cancellation of those other 3, he had some making up to do, and they had the ability to do it with the Apex Center later in the year. You know what I mean? So did he necessarily have to do this? No. Once Khabib was out, I think the writing was on the wall. But no, they pushed through with Gaethje. You know, they apparently Abu Dhabi and Florida and a bunch of other spots were being attempted. Everything was falling apart. And when he went to tribal land, he was doing kind of like the old school UFC style, which John McCarthy pointed to. The old school UFC style, they ran away from regulation. And when Dana White and the Fertittas came aboard, they wanted to run towards regulation. But remember, there's stories of the first couple UFCs where they were going to have it in Michigan and a judge ruled you can't have a closed fist or whatever. So they went down to Alabama. I mean, and that's what John McCarthy was talking about on the Weighing In podcast with Josh Thompson. You know what? Sometimes you just got to lose some of these battles. And eventually they lost the battle because Governor Newsom spoke to Disney, who owns ESPN, who's partners with the UFC. And I think finally really, really big names decided, yeah, okay, this is just a speck in what's happening in the real world. We can't have this happen.
I agree with John McCarthy. I mean, especially John McCarthy. He was one of the people that did so much to run towards getting this regulated and all that. People like Mark Ratner were just instrumental in doing these types of things. So for this one card to go so rogue, even though they were going to kind of regulate themselves, remember, every day the news was changing. So we don't know if by the end of the last day or something, if California was going to put some kind of sanctions on officials, right, or referees. So we don't know what they were going to actually show up with.
Exactly.
And I just think it was a really, really bad look. And I think a lot of it had to do with ego.
He should have recognized that because every day things were changing.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it had to do with ego, with the fact that he just went on there early and said, I can make whatever happen. I'm going to make this happen. I think he got caught up in that. And so now that it's all said and done, I think it's a good chance to just reset. And I think almost like the coronavirus task force comes out, right? Almost grab like a group of people that involves maybe a little media, fighters, regulators, and just figure out how we can make it happen. Whether it's Fight Island or another version of this, you know, you don't even have to do 12 fights. Maybe just 5, whatever it is. But see how we can get back to normal and actually have some fights. Just see how it would work with camps and all that. I don't think you have to dive in and just go, where the UFC, here's 12 fights, here's 15 fights. Just do it slowly, but maybe start going in the direction of making something happen.
At Fight Island?
wherever it has to be, but with everybody on board.
All right. Well, so Dana, I think he took advantage of the time he had with ESPN's Brett Okamoto in announcing the fact that 249 was canceled. You know, he mentioned, hey, look, I went down swinging. I went down to the 11th hour. I tried my best. But guess what? He said Fight Island is going to be ready in 1 month. So he's already turned the page. And I think he, I don't know. I mean, I understand your idea, but he just seems like the type of guy that I don't even think he listens to his matchmakers. I think the only one he used to listen to is Lorenzo. And in this case, it's Ari. But I think with Lorenzo, Lorenzo was in the office. So Lorenzo could look him in the eye and go, shut the fuck up. Or stand down. Or no, we're not doing that, you know. And Ari isn't there. I think Ari and him communicate, but I think Ari just lets him do what he does because they're successful. And look, the Wall Street Journal came out with a report that said the UFC will make $750 million if they deliver 42 shows. So obviously with them losing the three that they did, Columbus, Portland, and one other one.
248 or 249.
No, not 249. There was one other one in between. Here, I'll look it up real fast. Oh, London. Remember London with Woodley and Edwards? So those three. So that was already setting them back. They've done seven this year. They have 35 to go. They just canceled three, and this will be the next. So I knew he already knows that he's going to have to be in some sort of a catch-up mode anyway. But yeah, they get, I don't think you can call it a bonus. We had John Morgan on the Avengers, and he was trying to explain that all sports leagues kind of get this. It's part of their part of the agreement they do. Hey, look, we're going to broadcast so many events. This is what we get paid. But regardless, we know that they're going to get that kind of money if they do a certain amount of shows. So are they going to be able to, you know, comply because we're in a pandemic? Who knows? But another thing I saw within that report was they would stand to make $20 million if they did the show, regardless of there's no gate because of the way the thing's structured. Remember, ESPN handles the pay-per-views now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, yeah, of course there's money involved for sure. But I think Dana's just, man, he's got the resources and the power to wake up in the morning and make something happen, you know? So anyway, be that as it may, 249 is canceled. He says Fight Island's going to have, he says that island's going to be ready in a month. He said that on April 9th. So on May 9th, what does that mean? Is UFC 250 going to happen? The one with Cejudo and what was supposed to be Aldo, and apparently Cruz is going to step in? Doesn't sound like it, because Henry Cejudo already has stated he's just pulling the plug on his camp. So what's going to happen with Fight Island? I don't know, but it sounds like that's the soonest time where we'll possibly see a fight is no less than a month from now. No. Yeah, exactly.
I just wish there was more information.
I know.
On how Fight Island is going to work, because right away, I think you can poke a million holes in what's actually going on. So I wish we could just fast forward, or they could give us a little bit more info of what it is they're thinking. But the way they went the first route of just being as secretive as possible just seems so shady. That's why I wish now we can just reset everyone on the same page and just maybe give us a little bit more info and let fighters weigh in a little bit and just see how it's going to work out. Because now I think everybody's on the same page and everybody's rooting for this to happen. Just so long as it happens in a way that everybody can be safe.
Here's what I'm thinking goes. I think a lot of people, like you said, poke holes. I'm not saying that's wrong, but I think what Dana's saying is, hey, look, when you go get food, you're not 100% protected.
Right.
You're wearing the mask, but you're amongst others, but you got to get food, right? He doesn't have to throw on a show, but he elects to throw on a show with fighters who elect to be on it. So he's not putting a gun to anyone's head and saying, you must do it, you know? Rose elected to back out. Leon Edwards elected to back out. Some because they wanted to and just didn't feel right. Others because they were actually dealing with the repercussions of death or whatever. And others because they just couldn't get out of the country. But I think in the end, we're not going to get the full proof. I mean, they're not going to fight in astronaut suits. Mm-hmm. So I think this island is going to be made. And I think the most he can do is get you in a week early and have you stay back a week, you know. But I think they're going to do the adequate testing. But then after that, they fly home and you know, and then the next group comes in. But it'll never be foolproof. And you guys can always poke holes. But I think Dana's stance is always going to be, look, this, we're just we're moving forward with it with as much, you know, availability to safety as we can. But the fighters don't have to, they don't have to participate.
I think in a way it is foolproof, because really, how are you going to prove that a fighter actually contracted the virus during the fight or on Fight Island? If I'm Dana White, I just say, man, he probably got it on the way home. The Uber ride from the airport home, or if he stopped at a supermarket on the way home, that's when he got it. I mean, there really is no way to actually sit there and go, this is when he got it. So, yeah. So in a way, I think it's a little foolproof, but I think we all know that. So it's this being secretive is what makes everything seem so shady. So I just wish there was more info.
Yeah, that was probably because he knew that what happened with Feinstein and Newsom.
He knew that was coming.
Exactly.
And everybody could see that. That's why it seems so terrible.
And the media's got a hard-on for him and the UFC. And I'm not saying I disagree, but it all comes because of his personality. I don't think they just look at him and go, I hate the UFC. We don't want fighters to make money. We don't... Fans look at it too wrong. Fans are always saying, like, the media fucked this up. The media... the media's the one that pushes the agendas for fighters to associate, you know, to unionize, to fight for better pay, and they try their best to uncover ways in to prove, you know, what the disparity, you know, that other leagues are 50-50 between owners and players, and the UFC isn't. But because the UFC's private, it's tough. But when they do, they uncover it, and you know, the media doesn't want bad stuff for the UFC. The media only wants to report it, and then you can form your own opinion. Now, along the way, there's a lot of opinionated media members, and I think a lot of them are just jilted too. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because of the UFC and the way they and their tactics. So I don't blame them for being jilted. It's just sometimes I think they just press and press and press and press. But regardless, all right, we spent enough time on that. Let's talk about, I guess, some of the stuff that's still going on now post the announcement of UFC 249. All right, so a couple of fighters are making reports as to where they stand. And I'm glad they did this. So I'm glad fighters are still doing interviews or whatever. Aljamain Sterling spoke to Fada Hanou from MMA Junkie. He's given a progress report. He's 70% towards being 100% healthy from that wrist injury. So for anybody that says, hey, why was it Aldo instead of Sterling and Jan? Sterling wouldn't have been able to go. Jan would have, but they went with Aldo, which now is not going to happen. But when Aldo fell off, why Cruz and not Jan? I found out, goes, that Jan wasn't in Russia, but he was in Thailand, and he wouldn't have been able to get in anyway, mm-hmm. right? But now that this has been postponed, will they still go with Cruz, or will this island, this remote island, will that allow someone from Thailand or Russia or fill-in-the-blank country to fly in? Because if that's the case, then it should be Jan versus Cejudo when this gets figured out.
Yeah, I think everything is just, everything we knew before makes no sense now. I think there's just a big reset button on everything, and you're right. Now there's a lot of different scenarios, but I don't know that. To me, when Henry Cejudo says he's going to kind of put a pause on camps and all that, I don't know that fighters are going to want to jump, be like that first group of people that fight on that island. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling that that first set of fights are going to be maybe lesser known fighters or something. I don't know. I don't think they're going to come in big. Okay. So I think it's going to be a while before we start to see names like Cejudo and stuff fight on this island.
All right. Well, I think the UFC is going to try their hardest to book some decent fights, but you're right. I think what the UFC might do is say, okay, because they got every day the data is different. Remember when Governor Cuomo would go, looks like we're going to need, at the rate we're going, we're going to need 30,000 ventilators. Mm-hmm. And now we've done, everybody's done such a good job of curbing, flattening the curve, that now not as many will have to be used, thankfully, in hospital beds and all that stuff. Well, I think the UFC is getting that type of data as well, the state of Nevada. And I think what everyone's going to realize is that at some point later this fall, we will be able to have events, at least at the UFC Apex Center for starters, And I think that's where the UFC may have some of their bigger fights. But if the UFC sees anything in the forecast that says, hey, in December, we could have 15,000 or 20,000 at the T-Mobile. Trust me, that's where I think they'll really try and have some of their bigger fights. But I don't think they're going to also just get away from the Woodleys and Edwards and Ngannous and Rozenstrucks and stuff like that. Whether it happens at Fight Island or not, I think they're going to... They want to deliver that $750 million, man. That their revenue last year was $900 million. So if this represents $750 million, remember, there's no T-shirt sales, there's no merchandise, there's no gates. I think they got to do something,
man. Even when they come back, like even when you are able to put arenas together with fans and all that, the economy is just taking such a big hit that I don't know that there's that many people that are saying, sign me up. Now sounds like a good time for a trip to Vegas, or you know,
they're gonna have to come down.
I think so.
It's gonna be like rent 100 for ringside. All right. In the meantime, Chris Weidman said, "Hey, look, I was supposed to fight Hermanson. Guess what? I've already accepted." He said, "Yoel Romero and Edmund Shahbazyan."
Mm-hmm.
So I'm only bringing this up to tell you all that those kind of names are being thrown around to maybe. Hopefully fill out the Fight Island card or something or whatever they decide. Dan Hooker saying, give me Poirier still. And it's interesting because I wanted to spend a little bit of time. Goes, now what do we do? Habib gave a timeline of when he can come back. He picked September. I looked at the last couple September cards, and they're not both of them were on. They're both in early September, but one was on the second weekend of September, and the first weekend's always Labor Day. But let's just say it's the first weekend of September. And if Habib's ready to come back, it's Habib versus Tony, correct?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, jeans, there's no way around everything, that. That's it. Mm-hmm. So wouldn't you plan on Conor and Gaethje right around the same time? I don't think we can do the same card, and I'll tell you why. Because Conor likes the headline.
Yeah.
Of course, now we're not talking about these arenas and all that. We got to get that out of our head. I mean, what's he going to do? They're all on Fight Island, for crying out loud. So, it's not going to be like, I guess, what it once was. At least in 2020, it doesn't appear that way. So would it make sense to just do them maybe on the same card or the week later? But just have them on the same timeline?
I guess like a week later or something like that, because I doubt they would do them on the same one.
Yeah, because it's just a different Saturday for everyone to watch, right?
Mm-hmm. But that's if Conor McGregor wants to stick around and be relevant this year, I think he's got to take that fight. He has to take that fight. And because I don't think the UFC, jinx or no jinx, they got to make Tony and Habib happen. They have to. If both guys are healthy, you have to go after it. It's the fight that makes the most sense. So I think Conor doesn't want to get caught up having to wait and all that. I think he's got to be relevant too.
All right, so here's what I think is going to happen in the lightweight division now that we're going to have to reshuffle the deck. I think for sure you revisit Tony versus Habib. And by the way, Tony found out while he was doing an interview that he was not going to be fighting at UFC 249. And the interviewer actually told him that. And his reaction was just kind of like, oh, man, you know, that sucks. He's probably been through so much that who knows what he really wanted, was thinking or what he wanted to say. But it could be that from the day that Habib fell out, he's already probably been disappointed at the way things have played out. But Chris Cyborg made a good point. Bellator would not have allowed that to happen. Bellator would have told the fighter first. She said the fighter deserved to hear it first before just hearing it that way. And we've said that
in
the past.
I disagree.
Really?
I think normally, under normal circumstances, mm-hmm. that probably would have happened. But I think with everything going on in the world and the way this card has been happening, I don't know that it would have went down that way. I think the UFC probably wanted to be the first ones to say, this is not going to happen and this is why.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if they would have taken the time to call everyone that they were considering on that card.
But Tony's special because he was one half of the main event that we were all waiting on. The guy that said, yeah, all right, give me Gaethje. Mm-hmm. The guy that was told, hey, your passport, get it ready. We're going to Abu Dhabi. Hey, it might be off Florida. Hey, we don't even know if Putin might allow Habib to come back because Habib was doing interviews as well. And so you're right. Not the whole card. I agree with you there. Except Tony, maybe that did make sense. When I read it, man, usually things jump out at me and I usually go, I feel Chris Cyborg. Because Chris Cyborg can sometimes, you know, complain about the UFC still. She still has those bitter feelings or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes when I read it, I'm like, well, you know, like you know, her rematch with Amanda and all that. He could have had it if he stayed, you know, that type of thing. But when I read that, I was like, yeah, I kind of get that. And if they had the time to go, Dana, we got to make this announcement, call Brett Okamoto. Now, we know Brett lives on Rainbow here, you know, not far from the UFC. But if they had the time to call him and he went there and set up and got Dana ready to do that, then I think they can, someone can, it doesn't have to be Dana, but Lene or someone can call Tony and go, listen, we're going to make an announcement soon, but we wanted you to hear this. This is what's happening. I don't think Tony's going to run to Twitter and beat them.
You never know. I would probably think that a fighter would do that.
Well, if he does, I mean, he doesn't. Not every person on this planet follows Tony Ferguson. He's probably got 100,000, 200,000 followers. And, you know, I don't know. But anyway, so I think it'll be Khabib versus Tony. Dan Hooker did an interview with MMA Junkie. I'm not sure who did that one. I think it might have been Fada Hanoun. He wants Poirier still. Okay, we're good there. Gaethje versus McGregor, we're good there. And now that leaves Charles Oliveira kind of out there dangling. So maybe versus Islam Makhachev, I'm thinking. It's almost like we have an eight-man tournament just that alone. Just in the lightweight division, things can get exciting this year. But anyway, other divisions, I guess we'll have to start from scratch. When we talked to Masvidal, he said he wanted to, he still wanted to talk, fight the other unnamed fighter. He didn't want to give him publicity, but we've uncovered that it's Kamaru Usman. I think Woodley versus Covington now has a shot because of the reshuffle. Like, there's no more London. It's the
perfect time for it.
There's no more, you know. I mean, Edwards is legitimate for sure, but I could see Woodley versus Covington maybe having a lot of legs now with the reshuffle.
Yeah, I could see that. Before
I wanted Woodley versus Edwards still.
Can we talk about something?
Sure, real quick? Yeah.
Before the show ends, I do want to get to Ronda Rousey.
Okay.
You tell me when's a good time to do that.
All right, so let me just finish here. So Hooker's still out there. Chris Weidman's throwing out, you know, Shabazian, Yoel Romero, which I couldn't believe, by the way. Y'all still in there. Y'all still somehow in the mix. All right, and then speaking of Poirier, here's a feel-good story. He's going to be donating, or they did donate, 1,000 meals on Easter Sunday, him along with the Good Fight Foundation, his foundation. They teamed up with Dino's Pizza, and so that was a really, really nice story to see. You know, a lot of other fighters are out there bitching, complaining, or joking around, farting around, or whatever. But I like that some fighters just say, you know what, instead of doing that, I'm going to follow up on something I've started or just do something to make people feel good. And I think Dustin's just one of those that consistently does it. He's the one that sells his fight shorts, his fight gear.
The playground.
Yeah, and look at the things he's done. And simple stuff like this is awesome.
That's great to do during this time.
They teamed up with Dino's Pizza. They donated 1,000 meals to the hospital staff on the front lines of COVID-19 in Lafayette, Louisiana. It goes for Sunday and throughout. So I really, really liked hearing that. And, of course, Israel Adesanya and John Bones Jones kind of went at it at Twitter a little bit. Did you see?
Yeah. Who started it, though?
I think Israel did.
Okay, because I thought I saw a tweet late last night where it looked like he was instigating it, but now I didn't see it, so.
Yeah, I think he just asked where he was or something, yeah. But Jones fired back with a picture of Adesanya where he got knocked out in kickboxing. And he said, wasting all that good oxygen, someone wake this bitch up and change his tampon. And then Adesanya answered, because Jones did the whole post and delete.
Mm-hmm.
And Adesanya said, I've been KO'd once, and I never made that mistake again. How many times have you been arrested? How many times you pissed hot? How many times you had your belt taken off you? You never learn, you pulso-picto pussy.
When I saw Izzy initiate that, I thought, I don't think this is a good look right now.
I would agree.
I mean, the guy is probably at his lowest moment ever, John Jones. There's probably no chance of fighting him right now. There's just too much in the air. It just seemed odd because Izzy hasn't really done that before. He's really quick to respond. Mm. And there's times where he would poke at John, but it was because there could be a potential fight coming up or something, or they've had some kind of beef.
But Izzy has to have the Costa fight, and Jones has to fight one of the big three.
Yeah.
Blachowicz, Santos or Dominic Reyes, and then we can talk about that other fight. So I thought where you were headed was Easter, the pandemic, that it wasn't the right time because of that.
No, all of it. Just all of it together. It just didn't seem like, it just seemed odd at the time to see that. And I thought he might have dropped the ball on that one. And then I was actually a little shocked that John would even respond. At this point, I think you just have to be the guy, whether you're right or wrong. Just shut up. Just stay off of Twitter. Just go away for a little bit. Even if people are poking at you, you're John Jones. Mm-hmm. You're the champ. Just let it go.
I would agree. I think a lot of times he could have just avoided it, but I think he just can't help himself, honestly.
But that's what gets him in trouble. That's one of the big reasons he's in trouble, is he cannot help himself.
By the way, circle the 5th of September on your calendar. I think that's when we can have a return of Khabib Tony.
The 5th of September?
Yeah, I was kind of playing out who might be the 8 lightweights and how they might be matched up, the top lightweights, who they might match up against each other. But I noted the 5th of September might be. I think Khabib said something about circling or coming back in September. So I think the 5th of September would be a good day, maybe the 12th. But I think the 5th, that's around the time the NFL comes back too. If the NFL comes back, who knows? Mm-hmm. I don't know. All right, I'm going to finish up here with Ronda Rousey talk.
Dude, in all of sports, she may be the one individual that I actually used to like Ronda Rousey. She was in our studio. She was very charming, very cool gal. But she's just not getting it, I think. I don't know what her deal is, but why is she so jaded just towards every fan, coaches, sport organizations? Like, what is her deal at this point? Why are her stances just so... I think everyone else can see it, but her, it's the strangest thing.
I don't know. I won't say who, but we once hired a writer at MMA Junkie. And I knew who the writer was, but then I asked somebody, hey, how's so-and-so doing? And I was told, he's doing good, but you just kind of need to add a boy a little bit. You know, the positive reinforcement is something that person has stated that they like. And I thought, wow, very cool of the writer to say, hey, look, I just work better this way. You know, I guess if you're going to like tell me I misspelled or I grammatically didn't do something, just kind of take it easy. You know, a lot of people don't like to get yelled at or whatever. I think Ronda's just the same way. She's had so much success everywhere she goes that I think when you're not booing her or praising her, she's like, hello, do you not see that gold medal? Do you not see that UFC belt? Do you not see that WWE belt? I'm Ronda Rousey. Like, how dare you or whatever. And it doesn't give her a free pass on the fact that everything she says and everything she does is something that we're all going to agree with, or that we're all going to, you know, applaud for the rest of our lives. I mean, you know, the Patriots can win a Super Bowl, but then the next year if they lose it, yeah, okay, now we talk about your run maybe, but you're not the current champ. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think Ronda feels like kind of like what we talked about with DC. Once a champ, always a champ, you know, and still a champ. And so now I can still go out there and say what I want and do what I want and act however I want. And you still have to hold me in this high regard. What that comes from, I don't know. I guess just this incredible ego and arrogance. One that I didn't see initially, because when you're right, when we met her through Tough Enough and early days of Strikeforce, I think she knew that she had an appeal of some sort, you know, and that she could be huge. But I didn't see someone that looked like, you know, I can be huge, but I'm also going to be like an untouchable or something special, you know? And I don't know.
It's pro wrestling, though.
I mean, Jordan How doesn't have that type of arrogance.
How could you be upset with pro wrestling fans? You're playing a certain role. I mean, I would just say, grow up. at this point.
You're right.
It's pro wrestling fans. How could you possibly have?
And she's been humbled. Remember, she said she lived in her car after the. She said, "I got the bronze medal and $10,000, and they turned their back on me, and I gave everything." Well, yeah, well, fuck. The next core of judokas comes through. You know what I mean? And I mean, if you're more than welcome to be a 2-timer, 3-timer, 4-timer, whatever it is, you know, that you aspire to be. But this is the way it works. You knew going into judo, there's no money. If you wanted to make big money, look what the Williams sisters did, you know? Mm-hmm. The dad said, oh, wait, they pay well over here, you know? His daughters weren't directed towards basketball or another sport. And so, yeah, complaining about something that's already been set up, maybe you aspire to change it, which is something she did in MMA. All right, cool. But you don't, it's not, you know, the gratitude isn't just, it's not forever. Now act like a former champion. Act like a gracious loser. Act like a mentor to others. You know what I mean? And be, you know, be proud of your accomplishments, but be a normal person, normal, you know, the way the rest of us are. I mean, we're not like athletes that look at our records in the morning or anything like that, but we have ups and downs just like everybody else. Yeah. It's as simple as that. And she just cannot seem to get that through her head. And we've seen it 3 times now, you know. But, yeah, that was a horrible appearance. I was
pulling my hair out. I couldn't believe what I was reading. And, man, it was a member of the media maybe, or somebody made a good point. And they said, isn't it funny how that same kind of edginess and all that is what made her popular, but now is the same thing that's making her unbearable. And it's true. It really is. Like, that shtick is over.
And if you think about it, she caught some breaks along the way, because even going back to, remember the whole Misha Tate versus Sarah Kaufman and why it should be Ronda? I don't even remember how that played out. Remember Ronda was injecting herself early on, mm-hmm. and okay, you know, she won out, she proved her point and everything, but instead of accepting that loss, you know, still the special treatment, and now I'm going to come back and I'm going to do no media and I'm not going to do anything. And I thought she was going to turn around, you know, where? At the induction ceremony at the Hall of Fame. Were you there with me at the Palms? I think you were.
Was I?
I think so. And she received it, and I remember looking over, and Carolina Kowalkiewicz.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. I was there.
Carolina Kowalkiewicz had tears in her eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And a few of the other ladies were like, way to go, Ronda. You know what I mean? Because they played a montage of her highlights and all that. But once again, leaving out the bats. You know what I mean? I guess I get that one. But still. But I could see how she moved other female athletes. And I'm like, bitch, don't you see that? Don't you see how people still love you regardless of the losses? No, she has to look, you know, like, get my award, stand there, smile, and then have nothing to do with MMA again. Why? Because you lost? Because, I mean, how about the times that you shoved it in people's faces for how well you did, you know? I mean, there were people that eventually were like, okay, enough, you know, now I want you to get your ass kicked, you know? And that kind of happens to all the fighters. There's a lot of people that wanted Conor to lose eventually. There's a lot of people that probably want Habib and others and John and whoever, but why she doesn't get it, I don't know, because I've always thought she's pretty smart. When I hear her talk, she kind of flows and says some things where I'm like, okay, this girl's pretty smart too. Her mom's a doctor, so I know that
she's very smart.
There's some intelligence that runs through that family, but I guess there's just something to do there, man, where I don't know. But hey, I hope she figures it out. And no, this wasn't. I don't even want to see a comment or anybody hit me up and go, George and Goes, you missed it. She's a heel. She's playing the part. Fuck no. I've seen this 3 times already. I don't even think she's coming back to WWE.
She's being a baby. She's being a baby. She needs to grow up.
I agree. All right. We are going to bounce. Check us out on the Spinning Back Click, which gets released on Tuesdays. We're going to be filming that and talking about a few of the different things we kind of chatted about now. And, of course, things change every hour. So who knows what we'll be talking about. Check that out. Rankings report, obviously on hold right now. There's nothing to rank. Off Guard series, obviously on hold right now because we can't leave the house to catch anyone off guard. But we've been doing a lot of video interviews on our video platform, you know. So check that out. You'll see a few of them that we've put up in the past week or so, like Rich Franklin and Uriah Faber and Daniel Cormier and Derek Lewis, Misha Tate. Man, we had a good one, Francis Ngannou. Are they going to use any of that?
I don't think so, right? I think it was pretty much all centered on that fight.
It was, yeah. But the Masvidal stuff and everything's there at www.facebook.com/MMAJunkieRadio. Give us a like there. And don't forget to catch us on Wednesday over at Sportscaster, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. We're going to do a live MMA Junkie podcast, except it'll be in video form. On Twitter and Instagram, I'm at MMA Junkie George. Goes is at The Goes. And the radio show is at MMA Junkie Radio. We're going to bounce. We'll check you out on Thursday. In the meantime, go out there and be a champion.